KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, hello. Well, I'm from the Temescal, where it's always sunny.
Southside Berkeley.
Santa Clara, California.
Coming up, we're exploring KALW's home neighborhood, Portola. First, the story behind an historic mural.
I look up from my backyard, and that's what I see. Every day is the McLaren Park skyline.
Then how the neighborhood became an enclave for Maltese immigrants.
They'd pass him and they'd go, meow, 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 like a Maltese cat.
And how a Portola nursing home, originally called the Lick Old Ladies Home, has persisted through the power of protest for 130 years.
That time I had my wheelchair. And some of us actually went down to City Hall and protested.
Get to know the Garden District today on Cross Currents. A lot of San Francisco neighborhoods have iconic visual identities, like the Mission District with its colorful murals, or the Fillmore with sidewalk plaques commemorating the Harlem of the West. So then what do we see when we walk down San Bruno Avenue in the Portola District, just down the hill from KALW on the southeast side of the city? That's where KALW's Josiah Luis Alderete joined artist Arthur Koch to get the backstory of this oft-forgotten San Francisco neighborhood.
Arthur Koch and I are standing in front of his latest project, a giant mural and three panels showing the district's rich history.
The one common element across all of the three panels is the skyline of McLaren Park there. That's the unifying element there. And I look up from my backyard and that's what I see every day is the McLaren Park skyline.
The mural covers one of the outside walls of the grocery outlet over on Silver Street. It's a colorful mashup of the Portola's different cultural histories.
So then we have the people who were here first, the Olone Indians, and floating down Islas Creek, which has since been filled in. And then up on the hill.
It shows people who have lived in the neighborhood and some of the Portola's more distinct landmarks and architecture.
There's a whole block of greenhouses, and they used to grow roses and all different kinds of flowers that supplied San Francisco and Central California. And then after World War II, they changed those flower gardens to what they call victory gardens, which are vegetable gardens that supplied.
Arthur won a contest last year that was co-hosted by the Portola Neighborhood Association. He completed the mural in December 2016 with the help of many other residents.
Like 14 people volunteered to help me.
He also got to know his neighbors a lot better.
I met a lot of people that had grown up in this neighborhood that were second or third generation Portolans, you know, as well as, you know, new immigrants that barely spoke English. But they all really reacted positively, and if they didn't offer to help me, that some people would bring me refreshments or drinks.
It's part of a series of beautification projects happening in the area that's aimed at reclaiming the district's history.
The city recently officially named the Portola the Garden District because we were kind of like the farms for San Francisco a long time ago.
Listening to Arthur, it's clear that he's as much a local historian as he is an artist. I ask him to take me on a tour of the neighborhood and point out some of the people and places we see in his mural. As a light rain begins to fall, we cut through Grocery Outlet's front parking lot. Arthur begins to point out spots in the neighborhood that have come and gone since he moved back here in the 1990s.
You know, the Idaho Market is not there anymore. That's a wig store now.
What was the Idaho Market before?
It was an Italian supermarket. And they had their own butcher, as you see. They got the ducks and the hogs hanging in the window there. And, you know, the Jewish synagogue is no longer a synagogue, but it still has the Star of David there.
What is it now?
It's an evangelical church.
Many of the Italian and Jewish stores that used to be here are gone. Now, Chinese and Vietnamese businesses stand in their place. More than a third of the people living in the Portola today are Asian American.
22 years ago, it was really evenly mixed, I gotta say. You know, blacks, whites, Latins, Chinese.
Now, a lot of the black and white people have moved out. Arthur points to an old restaurant to our left.
Well, Johnson's Barbecue has been closed for a while, and they're trying to find somebody to put a business in there, hopefully another barbecue place.
The Portola has changed. Like so much of San Francisco, that it can be hard to see past the worn and comfortable-looking houses and storefronts in the neighborhood and find those layers of history that were created around here. Our tour is almost over. Arthur and I are walking past one of the Portola's more popular public spaces, Pelega Park. Almost immediately, Arthur is reminded of a story.
Sulagi Pelega. And there used to be a lot more Samoans in this neighborhood. And he was able to mediate between gang members to try to reduce gang violence. But unfortunately, in the process of doing that, he got shot and killed himself. So.
Pelega's story is one that many residents around here will always associate with the neighborhood, he says. We continue walking away from the playground and stop at the corner of San Bruno Avenue.
Thank you so much for talking with me, Arthur.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
After saying goodbye to Arthur, I start making my way back to his mural for one last look. I can see how the Portola's quiet streets might not necessarily reflect the culture and people that have passed through it the way other San Francisco neighborhoods do. This is still in my mind as I find myself in front of Arthur's mural again, where I see Maltese dancers next to Ohlone Indians, next to a Chinese man doing Tai Chi, surrounded by Italian immigrants working in Rainbow Gardens, while Jerry Garcia jams off in the distance. Suddenly, the notion of the Portola not having much of an identity dissipates into a thought that this quiet neighborhood is, in fact, lush with history and culture. In San Francisco's Garden District, I'm Josiah Luis Alderete for Cross Currents.
That story, like all stories you'll hear in today's show, was produced by a member of our Audio Academy Training Fellowship. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. When people think of the Maltese connection to San Francisco, the first thing that may come to mind is a famous piece of literature and the movie that followed.
The stuff that dreams are made of. Huh?
That was a clip from the 1941 movie The Maltese Falcon. It's set in San Francisco and based on the pursuit of a black bird statue that was stolen from Malta. But there's another, less familiar connection. It's that hundreds of people from Malta relocated to San Francisco's Portola neighborhood. KALW's Greer McVeigh talked with several Maltese immigrants who work, live, and play in the neighborhood.
If you walk down San Bruno Avenue in the Portola neighborhood, you'll notice an orange building sitting in the shadow of the Avenue Theater. Right now, it's a round table pizza. However, more than 60 years ago, this building was the Melita Furniture Store.
Melita was the Phoenician name of the island of Malta. It drew about 100% or 80% of the Maltese community.
That's Barbara Finnich. She worked at the store with her sister Margie for more than 30 years. Their dad, a first-generation Maltese, owned it.
A small shop selling, would you believe this, radios, toasters, irons, just small appliances.
Finnich's parents immigrated to the Portola from Malta in the early 1900s with hundreds of other families who flocked to San Francisco after World War I. Many of them settled in the Portola and opened businesses, like the Finnich's Furniture Store and the Spiteri Ice Skate Boot Factory.
Wait, stop coughing.
Yeah, and sit down.
Barbara and Margie Finnich and their friends like to gather at each other's homes to reminisce about this time, the good old days, growing up and working on San Bruno Avenue, what they used to call the Boulevard.
My sister Margie would work 5 days a week at the shop. Answer the phone, do the billing, dust the furniture, wash the bathrooms, sweep the floor. You name it, I did it. And then I would go in on Saturday and just like my sister said, you know, sweep up, move the furniture around.
The tight-knit community of Maltese immigrants built a thriving neighborhood that endured two world wars. But everything wasn't always great. Like any other ethnic group migrating to America, the Maltese sometimes felt like outsiders in their new country.
I think at the time that my parents came, there wasn't this problem of immigrants coming in. But when they got here to San Francisco, they were taunted to a point.
She remembers her dad telling her a story about how some people would mock him because he was Maltese.
They'd pass him and they'd go, meow, 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 like a Maltese cat.
People immigrated from Malta for many of the same reasons they'd migrate from anywhere. They were looking for opportunity, connecting with family, and wanted to share in the American dream.
There weren't too many jobs in Malta, so they were emigrating out of Malta. A lot of them came to the United States, Canada.
That's Brian Chaparra. He's the president of the Maltese American Social Club. The club used to be located in the Portola. Now they're just down the street in San Bruno. He says in those days, coming to America wasn't that difficult. And fitting in was quite easy for the Maltese because they had a community eager to embrace them.
And we are a people that kind of try and keep an eye on each other and help as much as we can each other.
There was and still is support from the Maltese consulate, which was originally located in the heart of the Portola. It's one of only a handful in the country. Louis Vella is the current Maltese consul general. He describes how the consulate was established in 1967 after the Maltese prime minister visited the Portola and met with a community.
Prime Minister of Malta came, he kind of noticed that there was a very nice Maltese community here. Many of them were very, very connected still with Malta and the old country.
So when the prime minister went back to Malta, he suggested they form a consulate in the Portola. It's been helping people find living arrangements and jobs and helping with their passports and immigration ever since. In the early 1950s, the Bayshore Freeway was built, linking San Francisco to Highway 101. But that changed everything. It made getting to the San Francisco airport easier and linked the city with the South Bay. But the highway cut right through the middle of the Portola. Barbara Finich remembers.
Well, the freeway sort of divided San Bruno Avenue.
Not only did it cut off traffic that it previously made stops in town for gas, lunch, and other business needs, it also separated San Bruno Avenue from Bayshore Avenue, creating two distinct communities.
They would just zoom by and forget all about San Bruno Avenue. It was kind of a trauma for us. Many of the businesses were closed, and then, you know, it started to get boarded up.
As a result, many of the locals from the Maltese community moved south for new opportunities. But families like Barbara's stayed and reinvented themselves. And all these years later, Barbara Finich continues to focus her attention on improving the neighborhood for everybody. She's an active member in the Portola Neighborhood Association.
And I've been involved with that, probably over 15 years. And it's from one thing to another. We were able to get underground lighting. We have a new public library.
They've put new lights on San Bruno Avenue and are currently renovating the old Avenue Theater. With neighborhood preservation moving forward, Barbara can now add Maltese preservation back onto her agenda.
Our job the last 2 or 3 years is to contact the immigrants that came to the Bay Area after the Second World War and find out, you know, like what village they came from. Why did they come to the Portola district? Why did they come to San Francisco? And we're making up a book or something to keep that in the archives for the Maltese history.
They're also helping the older generation stay in this neighborhood.
There's a lot of older Maltese people who husbands have passed away or they don't know how to drive. So we're forming an organization where somebody can pick them up, take them shopping, take them to, say, the Maltese Club for whatever function we have or to church.
Through it all, the Maltese community has persevered. This group that immigrated in large numbers following World War I have banded together to do things to keep their culture alive in this small neighborhood for as long as they can. Things, as Sam Spade in The Maltese Falcon says, that dreams are made of. For Cross Currents, I'm Greer McVeigh.
Greer McVeigh is a member of our Audio Academy training program. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We're spending the whole show today in San Francisco's Portola District in the southeast part of the city. That's where University Mound Reservoir is. If you've driven past it, you may have noticed a stately brick building with a wraparound driveway and towering white pillars. It's hard to miss with its gone with the wind looks. It's now Age Song University and has an elder care legacy dating back more than 130 years. KLW's Beatrice Thomas takes us inside the historic building.
It's Friday at 2 p.m. and the lobby of Age Song University in the Portola District is quite the scene. There's a groovy singer in a red Western snap shirt, earnestly delivering light rock radio hits. A catering table is set up with snacks, and there's even a wine guy. 40-plus seniors in and out of wheelchairs socialize in groups of twos and fours. We have entered happy hour at the senior home, y'all, and these seniors are lit.
So what's going on here right now?
We're having a party. You can't tell?
Joanne Bedard lived at another Age Song facility in Hayes Valley for nearly 20 years before moving to this campus a few years ago.
The other place was changing hands, and I wanted to stay with Dr. Nader, who is the starter and originator of Age Song. And this is Age Song University.
But Age Song University is only one of the identities in this building's long history of providing a place to live for seniors. When it first started over 130 years ago, it was known as the Lick Old Ladies Home. That's right. You heard me. The Lick Old Ladies Home. It was named after one of San Francisco's wealthiest men, James Lick.
In this part of the city, there was the Islayus Creek, and that was a broad marshland that was a great food source. Those marshlands were rich with clams, and the marshlands came all the way up to Bayshore.
That's historian Kate Connell. She's been living in and studying the history of the Portola District for 20 years. In the late 1800s, Mr. Lick was getting on in age, and he was looking for ways to distribute his considerable fortune upon his death. He decided to donate a hefty sum to establish a nonprofit residence for aging women of limited means in the clam-rich lands of the Portola District.
So we think of Lick Old Ladies Home, or what is now Age Song University, as one of the edge institutions in this part of the city. So in other words, institutions for the frail and elderly were built at the very far outskirts of San Francisco.
A few years after opening, the home's directors decided to change the name from Lick Old Ladies Home to University Mound Ladies Home. Because, well, you can imagine why. For decades, residents worked alongside the staff, tending the gardens and livestock that would provide that night's dinner. You know, farm-to-table style. This home attracted all kinds of women. Stenographers, former Rosie the Riveters, actresses, widows, and spinsters. In 2010, the home started accepting a new kind of resident.
I was one of the first men here because of the law that a nonprofit, see, it was a nonprofit organization, had to bring in men to be equal and fair.
That's resident Bruce Bean. He still lives at the home today. When Bean arrived, University Mound was in the midst of some major financial problems. Every single person who lived at the home received subsidized rent. It was one of the few elder care sites in San Francisco for low-income seniors. Subsidized care, plus the rising cost of living in San Francisco, exhausted the home's financial resources. Even when elder care provider chain AgeSong University stepped in to manage the home in 2013, it didn't solve the problems.
Since the beginning of the mission of this home, the ability to generate enough revenue from the resident fees was not adequate to cover the operating costs.
Bill Brinkman, University Mound's interim executive director, spoke to ABC7 in 2014 after the board of directors decided to sell the building. They didn't see a viable financial future for the home. Residents received eviction notices. They were given 60 days to find new places to live.
Oh, at that time, I had my wheelchair. And some of us actually went down to City Hall and protested.
That's University Mound resident Bruce Bean again.
A lot of the people defected, but there was a hardcore group that weren't moving or didn't want to move anyway.
The home's occupancy dropped from 75 to just 20 dedicated residents. Bean says he stayed because...
Well, you must understand, when you get a group of people together and they see each other for breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the dining room, and then meet together when they had activities and things, you get kind of a little group.
In the end, the residents were allowed to stay. AgeSong bought the building, and University Mound officially became AgeSong University. The small group of remaining residents, like Bruce, continue to receive subsidized care. And now, the home's occupancy is back up to 75, with plans to increase to 120 in the coming years. Back in the AgeSong lobby, happy hour is winding down. Joanne Bedard laughs with her best friend, Teresa. They both have big smiles on their faces.
You know, I've been here forever, and I plan to stay forever. As long as she can keep my spirits up.
Something tells me that Friday happy hours will be keeping spirits up for years to come. Kicking it with seniors in San Francisco's Portola District, for Cross Currents, I'm Beatrice L. Thomas.
That story and all the other stories in today's show were produced by our Audio Academy fellows. We are so proud of you guys. The rest of the team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Jürgen Klemm, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Claire Strempel. The show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Liza Veal. Jen Chien is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by acoustic fingerstyle guitarist Mo Kai. He's one of three songwriters appearing at the Monkey House in Berkeley on Thursday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Running away from the sunrise and the blood red brightness that burns my eyes, headed towards that soft nightfall. Well, a lonesome night bird cries. Out along the wasted highway, in the diamond glint of a new day, a rainbow plastic littered landscape.